This Dr. Pohl podcast is made possible with support from Vetresyn, your trusted name in animal wellness products. Learn more about our products, which makes caring for your animals simple and easy, at Vetresyn.com. That's Vetricyn.com.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the Incredible Dr. Pohlcast. I'm your host, Charles Pohl. I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, the Incredible Dr. Pohl, as well as John Schroeder. And as always, Michael Stankovic is our engineer.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, so, good evening, everybody. How are we doing tonight?
So we're really close to Thanksgiving, so I think we should start this episode out right and each go around the table and say, this year, in 2016, I am thankful for Dr.
John,
Pohl. You start.
Do I have to start?
You have
Charles,
to start.
Charles, you should start.
Right.
I think so. All right. Well, this year, I'll tell you what I'm thankful for. This year, I am thankful that we're not filming over Thanksgiving, because we've done it the last couple of years. We've been filming over Thanksgiving, and this year we have a week off before Thanksgiving. We can actually enjoy the holiday and have a little bit of time for reflection from the shooting and the filming.
You maybe. I have just one day.
Well, you just have one day off.
Just one day, and then Brenda's off on Friday.
I thought you liked work.
I do like work.
Yeah. So
you're thankful that you're off only one day.
Yeah, you're thankful you only have one day off.
So that's what I'm thankful for.
Okay.
I'm thankful for everybody, because it's been a wonderful year. We've had so many experiences, and yes, I hate to go shopping, but I'm thankful that we can. And when we go shopping here, downtown Mount Pleasant, the big metropolis of Mount Pleasant, we get stopped too many times. And then when I have to come here for the podcast, I'm an hour late. It's not my fault. It's the fans, according to Diane. So we're thankful for everybody that is enjoying the show, and we enjoy making the show.
Well, that sounds like a glass half thankful. John, what are you thankful for this year?
A couple things.
The other glass half full.
I'm thankful that the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, not because I'm a Cubs fan. It's because now you can watch an actual baseball game without the announcers reminding you that the Cubs haven't won a World Series in 100 years. And finally, I am most thankful that the election is over, so we no longer have to hear about it.
Well, that's a big thing.
Well,
that's
I
a good thing to
there
be thankful
too, yes.
for.
But we're not done yet the way it sounds like they're doing in California.
Well, election fatigue for sure. So we are coming up on our 100th episode. Can you believe that, Dad? We've almost filmed 100 episodes, and today we're actually being filmed doing this podcast. So what episode, looking back on the 100 episodes, do you have any memorable moments from those 100 episodes that, you know, stick out in your mind?
Well, one of the things was that hot summer, not this last one, the summer before that, and you and I were trying to pull that calf at that Amish gentleman in the barn with that heifer, or that cow was trying to have a calf, or was upside
and it was
down.
105 degrees.
And it was 105 degrees, and by the time I got done, I had the sweat in my boots. My feet were wet. That was one of the things that
I thought that cow was going to die. I thought that cow was going to die.
I didn't care about the cow anymore. I was thinking I was going to die.
Yeah, that was a crazy episode. That was a crazy summer because
it
of
was.
The heat. I'll never forget that, though, that time. I mean, that cow was so stressed out. We were chasing it all over the barn. We finally got it roped up, and then you were in there for what seemed like 45 minutes working on this bull calf trying to get it out.
It was a stupid bull calf that says, it's warm in here, and I don't want to come out. He didn't know how
it was warm. Outside. Yeah, it was warm outside,
I
too.
I couldn't tell him. He wasn't listening.
What about you, John? What's your, of the 100 episodes, what's your favorite moment of the 100 episodes?
I think it was that first phytotomy that we saw at Grimm's Organics, where the calf had practically liquefied inside of the mother, and we drove out into his pasture, and it was another one of those sweltering hot days. But I remember the sun was setting, all of our cameras were up, and Dr. Pohl was just pulling chunks of this calf out, and it was a smell that I'll never forget. I mean, Dr. Pohl talks about smell-o-vision. But, yes. But to me, that was
well, I was one of the first ones that you saw anything like this. And it always is a memorable event when you see the first time a calf being pulled apart like that.
Season 1, episode 1, I believe that ended up in. And I remember that too, because for me, that was the moment where I breathed a sigh of relief and said, okay, we have a television show here. This is definitely a moment within the television show.
And talk about a difference. That first season, we didn't even have lights. Do you remember that, Dr. Pohl?
No.
We would shoot interviews without lights. We would
that
have
is possible,
just scrims up and just nothing. We followed you around with no lights, no nothing, just a camera.
That's fine. I work in the dark half the time anyhow, so I closed my eyes, so I didn't see anything different.
For me, the thing I'll never forget is when you pulled that calf in the rain. That rain, that flooding that we had.
And it was alive, too.
Yeah, that thunderstorm and the calf coming out alive after they said it was in labor all day. I thought we were going to be pulling a dead calf. And, you know, to get out there and be rained on and have that happen, that was pretty incredible.
And this is what I like about you guys already. You're already, you know, celebrating life with me when you have a chance where you pull a live calf. And like I said, many times, you know, it'll be steak in 2 years from now. But at this moment, it's alive. And that's the important thing.
How about you, Mike? You should weigh in on this. What is your favorite moment?
Mike doesn't have a mic.
He's got it. He's got it.
Mike has a mic.
I have no idea.
You have no idea about your favorite moment.
My favorite moments on the show is when Mike is accidentally in the show. Mike is a co-executive producer on the show, and whenever I see him on the show, I freeze frame it, take a picture, and I text him his image on the show, and it's usually some horrified, weird look he has on his face.
That I just can't believe you don't know your favorite moment on the show.
I have one.
Okay, Mike finally got one.
I think it was season 2 when you pulled a dead, unfortunately, a dead colt from an Amish farmer's horse, and it reeked to high heaven. And this is the first time, probably in 5 years, you went, like you just powered through. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. It was a colt Amish person had called, actually, over
three days.
3 days, and he didn't know to leave a message because he didn't know how to use the phone. So when we finally got the call on Monday...
That was liquefied.
Yeah, that cat that was like hooves, and then the rest of it was liquefied, and you had to reach in and grab the teeth and the hooves. I think some people actually threw up from the crew, actually puked on that one, and that was a first. That was pretty awful. I don't think it was as awful as the sheep. Remember the sheep? The episode where I think it was maybe a season or two ago, we had a sheep come in and the end of July, and they had it on the back of a wagon, and they said, it's got a prolapse in the back end. And we went to go push the prolapse in, and there were like little maggots crawling on the back of the sheep. And then as we're shearing the sheep, the maggots
There's
are just blowing in the wind.
And that was supposed to be a fair sheep. And I told them, I'm sorry, this one I cannot make it heal up to the fair. That thing was in pain. We got rid of the maggots, and I hope that, you know, they just fatten it up and sold it to market. But yes, maggots is still something that grosses me out too. In 100 episodes, there were a few of them, but over my lifetime, I've seen too many of them. Talk about maggots. How about the little addition that we have in the clinic then, about the black cat?
Talking about maggots.
Fleas.
Talking about maggots, speaking of Tater.
Yes. Yeah. You don't know that.
Oh, I know Tater. Oh, I didn't know Tater had maggots.
Oh, my gosh. Emily had to leave the room.
Is that why his...
That's why his leg is off. His leg came in a trap, and that was already dead meat in the trap, and the maggots got in there, and Brenda kind of cleaned it up and put a bandage on there, but didn't clean it all up. There must have been some eggs there. So when I took the bandage off, we had football player maggots there.
Wow, and Dr. Emily's a champion of maggots.
Yep, but she said that's enough and had to leave the room.
Wow. Whenever you see those maggots, it's inevitable for the rest of the day, your head itches.
Yes.
You feel like you have maggots on you.
Or your back itches.
Yeah, you know? it's just...
See, I don't have hair on my head, but never mind. But yes, you, my back itches.
It's my head. It's maybe because I have hair on my head, but oh my gosh, my head itches. Yes. I feel like I got maggots in my head. I can't stand it. It's one of the things they dig those tunnels. It's pretty awful. It's one of the worst things that we can see in the clinic, in my opinion.
And especially when the animals are alive.
Dr. Pohl, did you ever think that when we first started, we came out here 6 years ago, that we would be 100 episodes in?
Did you?
No. Did you?
I didn't either. I thought 1 week with these guys and they'll be gone. And I thought, okay, it's fun. And that first trip to California, hey, that was fun too. You know, on stage with all the other three good-looking guys, it must have shown off a little bit because I'm better looking than nothing too, right? Yeah, right. That was surprisingly. You know, I thought, okay, after this first year, that's it, no more. Go back to work.
And what makes you keep doing it, Dr. Pohl?
What, the show or work?
The show.
The show? Because I can get rid of you guys. What else? No, it's honestly, because this show is about animals. I've said it so many times. The show is about animals. And what you see that we do with animals is real. There is nothing that we do to an animal to please these producers sitting by me for the show. So that, I think, is part of it. The people that are watching the show love the animals and love the show because of that. And those people that love animals are the best people. And this is why I want to have kids growing up with animals. It makes better adults.
Absolutely, and I agree with you 100%. Nothing is fake, and you've never said anything more true. You never do anything to please the producers.
If they don't get it the first, quit laughing, Mark. Quit laughing, Mike. If Mark, I told you to quit laughing. This is, I think, what was the Charles. Yes, I had to blame my kid for that. When we started that first week, remember, John, he said, Dad, do your work. Don't look at the camera. And that format is still there. And not doing anything for the camera to an animal is 100% real TV. And this is the reality show that we have. Maybe that's why we're going to get to 100 episodes next year.
Well, pretty quickly. We're going to get to
episodes
pretty quickly. It's going to be next spring. The 100th episode is airing.
Good.
So it's actually, we've already filmed the 100 episodes. It just hasn't aired yet.
Good.
So
when it airs, we still have fireworks here. We'll blow up the fireworks.
We have to go and take a break, but if you will stay with us, we'll be right back after this.
Support from this podcast comes from Vetresen. Vetresen is asking pet parents and animal owners worldwide what they enjoy most about caring for animals. Come share your stories at vetresen.com. That's VETERICYN.com.
Welcome back to the Incredible Dr. Podcast. We're going to be doing a special segment this afternoon, and that is going to be answering some fan questions. So, Dad, we have some questions that we pulled from our social media accounts, both Twitter and Facebook, and we're going to be asking them, and maybe you can answer some of our fan questions.
I hope so.
First question is from Lisa. She wants to know if there's anything she can do to prevent her dog from getting diabetes.
Yes. Just like anything and everybody, you are what you eat. So the main thing is not to let the dog get overweight. Exercise and a diet works for everybody, including dogs. What I don't like about all these dog foods, and even when people say it is an all natural, the preservatives in there are not good. And I think that what is causing some of the problems. The other problem is when dogs are getting allergies, and most of the time around this time of year, it's allergies for fleas, and they put them on cortisone as a anti-itch medicine, and that happened to my niece too, where they put the dog the whole summer, 3 months, on a heavy dose of cortisone. That turns into diabetes. You can't help it. So very, very, very sparingly with cortisone and cortisone injections. There are now other medicines on the market. One just came out again, and we're going to try that one out too. But it is not a cortisone, but it is just a monoclonal antibody that is for dogs only. And I hope those things start working, and then we will see less diabetes again. So keep your weight under control and not too many cortisone injections.
And what is your saying about killing the dog with love? I remember a lady came in and she couldn't stop feeding her dog treats. Ended up the dog, you diagnosed the dog with diabetes.
Yes, see, that's the problem. You know, dogs will eat as long as you give them food. And yes, when they are begging you, oh my gosh, I'm so hungry. Too bad, so sad, so am I. Don't eat too much. You know, it's so important. And I tell Charles that all the time too. It's not important to live to eat, but to eat to live.
You got that, Charles?
I don't agree with that. I think it's great too.
I can tell that's the problem.
No, I'm siding with you on this one, Charles.
Live to eat. I mean, life's too short, right?
Right. And Danny D wants to know, I don't know if she is a he or he is a she, but Danny D wants to know, can I breed my Pomeranian with a pit bull?
Sure you can, but I wouldn't do it. First of all, you know, I have no idea what kind of cross you get. And yes, if the pit bull is the female, that's a lot easier. If the Pomeranian is the female, it has to be artificial. But then you definitely will end up with a C-section. And I have no idea what kind of offspring that would be. But it definitely would be a weird designer outcome. And
a right pom now, pit? Or a pit pom?
Pitteranian.
A Pitteranian.
Pitteranian. But yes, we see all these designer dogs. And yes, they look nice and it's a different thing. But they're not a separate breed altogether. So, yes, it is possible. Feasible, yes. Smart, no.
Linda S. wants to know, do you have a favorite pet from either childhood or adulthood?
I've had many, many animals. When I was a kid, the first dog that we had was the same age as I was. It was Saint Bernard. And I don't know what happened there, but I still have a love for St. Bernards. And you know, you can see now in the upcoming shows that there is a St. Bernard back in our lives. Otherwise, a favorite pet? Not really. I've said so many times when I have to put a pet down for people and they've had it for 14, 15 years or longer, you'll never get the same animal back. Every animal is an individual. But that doesn't mean that you cannot love another animal just as much as the one that you just put down or lost. So my favorite animal? No. I can't say that, you know, one dog is better than the other, one cat is better than one horse is better than the other. I love my animals, period.
But you did have a silky chicken that I felt like you were very attached to that lived on the porch.
Wasn't attached to
so
it.
So that chicken you love more than the other chickens, I think.
I was taking care of it a little bit better because the other chickens were beaten up on it, and I'm always going up for the underdog. So it was this, the under chicken, and she was smart enough to know that there was food on the porch. There again, I think Chicken Hawk caught that one because we never saw any feathers, and it was gone. But that was a cute little thing, yes.
All right, Ashley wants to know what it's like seeing so many kids dress up like you for Halloween.
Scary. No, I'm not watching them, but yes, we see many, many kids that dress up like me for Halloween. It's very easy. Just put a nylon stocking over their head and slick the hair down and cut the eyes out, and away you go. Bald and beautiful.
Bald and beautiful like Patrick Stewart.
Who's that?
From Star Trek.
Telly Savalas, you know that?
Telly Savalas was more my type.
Barry G. wants to know, are you a cat person?
I'm a cat person, yes. Cats and I have a very good understanding. You bite me, I'll bite you back. And this is why, you know, when there's a mean cat at the clinic or scared, it's many times, Jan, can you get this one out of the cage? And yes, you know, you just look at them and just tell them, hey, it's okay. And most of the time, I can pick a cat up without any problems. While other ones, no, get bit. We had one working for us, and every other cat just about looked at him and bit him.
Oh, That's, phone call. That's
somebody's on call.
Emergency.
Are you on call, Dr. Pohl?
Sure. I work every day.
Now we may have to cut this one short. Let's see what happens.
Hope not. The phone will pick it up. If it's an emergency, I will come and get you.
Snyder41D wants to know, do snakes make good pets?
Surprisingly, I have to say yes. But there again, know what you're getting into. Snakes live a very long life too. So yes, if you have a snake as a pet, you better make sure that if you're not there anymore, somebody else will take care of it. And never, ever turn them loose into the wild.
That kind of actually, you know, the thing about snakes, and I have tortoises, you know, what people don't realize that, you know, if their kids have allergies to dogs and cats and you wonder, like, what can you get your kid that doesn't have fur and maybe be hyperallergenic, you know, reptiles make really good pets with kids who have allergies because they don't have the reactions. They don't have the dander that other pets do, like gerbils and mice,
right,
and stuff, yeah, like that. So you can definitely give your kid a reptile, whether it's a tortoise or a snake.
But there again, they need special care. So you have to find out, and many times you can do it online already, what these animals need.
Well, you need a heat lamp, first of all.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Most of the time, these amphibians or snakes or reptiles have to have a special cage where it's a lot warmer than your regular home in the wintertime. And yes, they need it. Otherwise, they basically go in hibernation and, you know, they are more or less dead to the world. And I think, you know, that is the main thing. Know what you get before you get it.
Well, for reptiles, I'm kind of a reptile expert. You definitely need what you need. If you're thinking about getting a reptile and you want to say, what do I need to get a reptile? What's a good starter kit? I would say you need some sort of heat element, whether it's a heat lamp or heat rock. I prefer a pad that you stick under the bottom side of an aquarium, mm-hmm, or a terrarium, and you put that on, and it's a great, it heats from the bottom up, just like how reptiles usually get heated from the ground. And you need a special lamp bulb that has UV sunlight, because they're not going to be going outside. They need to get that sunlight from somewhere, that vitamin E,
D,
right?
Vitamin D. Yes.
From some source. So a good light, a sunlight, a UV bulb. And then you also need to feed your animal calcium, a calcium powder, to give it supplemental vitamin D, but also calcium, because that's a food group that they don't get from like mice or lettuce if you have a tortoise. And then it's fairly easy from there. It's like you feed them dead mice if you have snakes, crickets if you, mm-hmm, have lizards, yeah, or lettuce
many,
if you have tortoises.
Many snakes will not pick on dead animals. Snakes are live animal eaters, so you better, you know, be prepared that, you know, something doesn't look good. And like you've seen in the show already, you better watch it, what happens. Otherwise, the roles are reversed and prey will eat the preyer.
Well, you can tempt the mouse by tempt the snake by putting the mouse in the microwave for a second to kind,
yes,
of warm it up, and then tie a string on it and drag it along. They,
yeah,
like,
but then you make sure that the string comes off when he swallows the mouse.
Yeah, well, you have to do that. Definitely. But yes. I mean, there are ways around that.
Right.
You know, I would advise highly against feeding your snake live animals, because you don't know what's going to happen. That, you know, you would think that a mouse or a rat would be easy prey for a snake, but sometimes they're not hungry right away, and then the snake becomes food for the mouse or the rat, and we've,
right,
seen that.
Yes.
Well, Charles, now there's going to be all sorts of kids putting mice in microwaves, and I guess the mothers across the world can thank you for that.
Yes, but make sure that the mice are dead before you put them in a microwave.
And only for a few seconds. Don't overcook them.
Don't
barbecue
the mouse.
No. You just want to get it a little bit warmer, and that snake will latch on it because it will see the body heat. That's how they hunt. They hunt through body heat. So you want to warm that mouse up from refrigerator temperature, so
but
the
there again,
snake can,
you know,
see it.
A snake is a pet. And you know, I've seen many snakes, and those snakes do know who is or who has the hand that feeds them. The funniest thing that we saw when we were on vacation in Jamaica, and this gentleman had a snake draped around his head like a hat, and he would just unroll it and hand it over to the people, and the snake would just hang there. Basically, had been handled many times, and all he had to do is, there comes the second ring.
Yeah,
hang on. And all he had to do is put the snake back on his head, and it would curl up with a loop underneath his chin, and a couple circles on top of his head, and the head on top.
Yeah, I would suggest too, if you're looking at snakes, and you're looking for a constrictor, boa constrictors are relatively friendly, but avoid pythons. Pythons
yes.
are much more aggressive.
Oh, yes.
They're biters. So
but then again, if you don't want the tropical snake, we have milk snakes, which are white, and they are very, very friendly. And those are small, they never grow up, and they don't live as long as the other snakes do. So yeah, find out what kind of pet that you feel like getting and know the pet before you get it.
Great. And good segue to the next question. Tweet Mom wants to know, she's thinking of adopting a mutt. Are there any issues to be aware of while adopting a pet? There's not information. You can't look up mutt in a book like you can a golden retriever and get that personality description, the height, the weight. What's your advice about adopting a mutt?
No, the mutt is a very dirty, old-fashioned word, and we don't use it anymore. We now use designer dogs. But designer dogs many times is a mix between breeds. And yes, sometimes they say that if you take the grand champion at the dog show and take DNA out of him, you'll find out that there are other breeds in that purebred dog too. Purebreds sometimes have more problems than a designer dog. That is because a mixture of genes always makes a stronger animal. So yes, it does make any difference what kind of mutt it is. Many times they're healthier, many times they live a little longer, and they can be just as nice and friendly as anything else.
But then again, know your dog. The first time you take your dog around other animals, you have to be careful because they can become aggressive to other animals. Some mutts, if you get it from a shelter, they run the street, so you don't know how they're going to act. So you have to be aware and be prepared, and just don't
yes.
let them off the leash assume the best.
Well, that all depends. We were talking about a pup, and a pup you have to socialize an awful lot. This is the main thing. When you get a dog that is young, make it socialized so that he will like people. If you keep him in the house and he never meets anybody, and then some stranger comes, he gets scared. When you get a dog, socialize him. Make sure that he sees a lot of people. He sees a lot of other dogs. If nothing else, take him to a dog obedience school. But get him used to it. Because like I said, nothing is more dangerous than a dog that is a fear biter. Every veterinarian is afraid of him because they are completely unpredictable.
When I got Athena, the first thing I did when I brought her home was introduce her to every animal that was at my house. And I think that's a really good way. When I brought my tortoises into my house, I was really nervous because, I have my cat and I have my dog, and I was worried that Athena or Kid would get up there and be like, oh, it's a slow moving buffet. And so the first thing I did was held out the tortoise to Athena and let her smell it over, let her see what it was, get the curiosity out of the way. And then from that point on, she doesn't care about it. She's just like, oh yeah,
yeah.
That's that thing.
Yeah,
so
that thing.
Introduce your animals. It really does work. It does help when they've introduced themselves and kind of got to know each other in your presence.
Correct.
Jean evidently has a dog that only has one eye. She's really worried. She said, should I be concerned or my dog be okay with one eye?
Yes. As you can see, we remove eyes because of injuries or disease or whatever. But a dog with one eye still has, you could call it 20/20 vision. He has depth perception, which we do not have with one eye. I have no idea what's wrong with us, because if animals can have it, why can't we? People that have one eye have a very hard time driving because they cannot judge the distance very accurately. Dogs have no problem. Cats have no problem. A dog that has one eye definitely is not running into things. And a cat with one eye knows exactly how the table is because it still jumps on the counter.
And if we've learned anything from the show, it's that a dog with one eye, a dog missing one leg, a cat with one eye,
they're not handicapped.
They don't care.
They never are handicapped.
You know, I think technically everyone at this table, well, at least the three of us, own a dog or an animal with less than four legs. Right. I have a cat with three legs. Yes. John, you have a dog with three legs. And
yes, the clinic has a cat with three legs.
Yes. Yeah, you have another cat with three legs. But yeah. Unfortunately, folks, that's all the time we have today. Please stay tuned. We'll have a new episode of the Incredible Dr. Podcast coming your way soon.
Looking for the best animal wellness products? From eyewash and ear rinse to hot spot spray and wound and skin care, Veterson has you covered for your home, the farm, and the ranch. Veterson makes caring for your animals simple and easy. For more information, go to veterson.com. That's VeterIcyn.com.